One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Okay, brother.
Okay, let's go.
Here we go. Hi again, everybody. Welcome to The Suspendables.
I might have had a couple cocktails today.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. That's right. You know what? You know what, Rusty? You're a lot more fun when you drink, okay? Don't let anybody tell you any different. You're just no fun to be with when you're not drinking. So pile them back, pal. Pile them back. This is Jungle Jim Jerome. I'm with Russ Courtnell, and this is episode 6 of The Suspendables, .. Jerome and Courtnell Unleashed. So it's a big title, Russ. It's lofty. We're going to have to bring it.
Nice.
I got my headset on. You know what I was just thinking, Russ, before we started on the show? Like, we're rolling here.
Yeah.
You know, I never figured out the right left ear thing when you put on headphones. Why do they have that there? It sounds the same. I flip them around. I go left on my right, right on my left. Anyway.
I'm glad you're thinking. I'm really happy today that you're thinking.
Maybe that we should throw that on the heap, Russ, of absolutely stupid, inane questions we're asking the tech guy in Australia. How do I put on a headset? Anyway, here we go, Russ. Two things, Russ, okay, before we get into it.
Uh-huh.
Someone told us, I said, we might try this as an experiment to see if we can do it, as they gave us shit about too many F-bombs.
Uh-oh.
Right? Some about the F-bombs. I said, well, we just couldn't do a show. We couldn't do one.
Did we get in trouble for too many F-bombs?
No, it's not just some fan, someone who's listening to the show. So.
Oh, boy.
I said, okay. Anyway, I just finished watching an hour ago, it finished the PGA Golf Championship.
Oh, my God.
Did you watch it?
I was with Trevor Gretzky and my son, Lawton, at the Tree Bar at Gaza Ranch here in Idaho. And we played nine holes, came in, watched the golf, and it was getting so interesting. And being around Trevor, watching his brother-in-law play.
Yeah, let's give a little background here. So Wayne Gretzky, of course, Trevor is Wayne's son. And of course, Dustin Johnson is married to Paulina Gretzky, and so he's everybody's son now.
Yeah.
anyway, go ahead. Dusty made a hell of a run.
Oh my God, it was so fun. Between holes, Trevor was having to run into the bathroom in the clubhouse. Yeah. So we moved up to the clubhouse for the last few holes, and unfortunately, Dustin, you know, fell short. But man, what a great day of golf for Dustin, and exciting for all the fans out there, because, you know, it got so close that we thought, well, maybe he's going to do it, might have a playoff, but it didn't happen. But anyways, Dustin did great.
Well, the story was, of course, Brooks Koepka, who shot 7-under in the opening round and then 5-under in the second. So he had a 7 or 8 shot lead after two rounds on a golf course. That's an absolute monster. It's an absolute monster, Bethpage. It laid down a little bit because the weather was good the first couple rounds, and it didn't really show its teeth. But Brooks just got so far ahead that he was afforded a bunch of mistakes. And Dustin was in there, and he bogeyed two of the last three holes to only lose by a shot in the end.
Yeah.
You know, this accomplishment, Rusty, you would have something to say about this. So Brooks Koepka now, there's four majors in golf. There's the Masters. There's now the PGA, which is second. And then the U.S. Open is in June. And then the British Open is in July. Mm-hmm. The equivalent of winning one of these majors, Russ, I mean, you played pro hockey, but you know the game of golf. Can you explain to people how big it is to win one of these majors?
Oh, my God. It's huge. You watch these guys who are so flipping good.
Yeah.
And we've all seen what's happened, you know, players, maybe up and comers win. And then the guy you think these three or four golfers it's going to be one of them. And then, you know, something else happens, but it's exciting. I think the four majors, brings out non-golf fans because it's so hard to win. Would you agree with that? Would you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, there's an interesting stat. The Masters, of course, just goes against the grain of anything about making money. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's no title sponsor. You know, it's not called the Cadillac Masters or something. The old boys club here at Augusta thumbs their nose at millions and millions of dollars. They just say, no, we want to make it for the, what they call the patron. They want to make it for the everyday guy. And for years and years, they only showed the back nine at the Masters. And the reason was because women enjoyed it more that way instead of the coverage that is today, you know? So it does bring a lot more fans to it. Now, the crazy thing here is you're just weighing in about what it is like to win a major, mm-hmm. which would for sure be the equivalent of winning a Stanley Cup, I would think.
For sure. And I didn't win one. Fuck.
Yeah. First. So now Brooks Koepka has won back-to-back PGA championships and back-to-back U.S. Opens.
Wow.
So he's won four of them. So now this guy's name is coming into one of the best of all time. He now goes to number one in the world. And this feat is amazing. He's under 30 years old, so he's won four majors. The only guy who did anything crazier than that modern day was Tiger, won 10 of them, if you can believe it, 10 majors by the time he was 30 years old.
Yeah.
So this guy, you know, they're talking about he won two U.S. Opens back-to-back and two PGAs, which has only been, I don't know, two or three guys have done that, including Tiger, mm-hmm. and then some guys from way back when the competition was what it is today. Russ, this guy might win three U.S. Opens. He's so good right now, back-to-back. But when you think of, you know, we bring up Tiger's name there, Russ, and I wanted to ask you as I look at my show notes. You know, who do you think, this guy's not there yet, Brooks Koepka, but who do you think, I'm interested in asking a professional hockey player who played at an elite level, is the best athlete of all time when you look at all sports? I'll give you some names.
All right.
So LeBron James, of course, is one of them. And then when you say him, you got to say Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Tiger when it comes to golf, mm-hmm. Tom Brady when it comes to football, Gretzky when it comes to hockey, Federer is another name I had down there in tennis. This guy's accomplishments are unbelievable. You'd think I was drinking. Jesus. Yeah, no shit. I said, Russ, someone asked me how much I drank in my day because I don't anymore. I said, I'll tell you how much I drank. I drank so much when my kids were growing up, they thought I had an accent.
Oh my God.
My parents, I told them, I never drank until my kids went to bed, Russ. So I put them to bed at 9:30 in the morning. I'm laughing at my own shit.
With a shot of NyQuil.
In any event, before you get to your answer on that, who you think that you can think about that for a sec, did you see Brooks Koepka is walking to the first tee?
Oh my God, I saw it.
He's got his chick who's just dynamite, who's blazing hot. I don't think it's his wife, it's his girlfriend. She leans in to give him a peck, and he gives her the fucking Heisman. Excuse my language. Gives her the Heisman.
Yeah.
Deny.
Yeah, yeah.
It was hilarious. Did you see it?
Oh, and then when he started falling apart, they were calling it the kiss of death or something. Like Trevor was on Twitter saying Twitter is blowing up because of the non-kiss.
Right.
And so that's what we were talking about until Dustin started getting close. And then we just started talking about Dustin, how well he's playing. And he's going, I think they're calling it the kiss of death.
the non-kiss. Maybe he's superstitious. Okay. We're not making out here before I go to the tee, you know? There's been many athletes who have a very strong tradition before they, you know, there was a downhill skier on the Canadian women's team.
Hold on a second. Was she there after? I didn't see the ending when he won, so.
Russ, okay. Yes, she was there, okay.
Did he give her a big kiss?
Yeah, he gave her a big kiss. And, but you know what? That's another thing, Russ. Yes, she was there. So, you know, the family's there. That's pretty good. And then all these freaking hanger-oners who just are following the guy around. Okay, what's the protocol here, Russ? Okay, when you win the championship, okay, everyone step aside, but everyone's crowding in there. You know, the girlfriend's got to step aside. Get out of the way. Okay, you can see him after.
Exactly.
Anyway, sure. So superstitions. Okay, he doesn't give her a kiss. I forget the name of the girl. She was on the Olympic team, and now she's an announcer in the downhill team. But she came out. She won a gold, silver or gold. And she came out the next day, and they said, what's the secret? And she said, I boffed my husband the night before. I do it before.
Oh my God. No
yeah.
way.
Yeah, wow. that was it. Did you have any were you superstitious when you played? Did you have anything going on?
So I was really superstitious. And then I started trying to lose them all because I saw some ridiculous bad hockey players in the NHL
right.
that had so many fucking superstitions. And I'm like, you're only going to get 2 or 3 goals this year. So what the fuck does that matter? So I started looking at myself and I went, okay, I'm losing them all. So the one that I carried me through my career was I always had to put on my left skate first.
Oh, okay.
And so that was the only real superstition that I had. But I just was embarrassed for some guys. Oh, my God.
Right.
It's hilarious.
Speaking of that, well, you may know this story. One of my favorite stories about being superstitious, Rick Tocchet, of course, who had a pretty good year this year with Phoenix. Yeah. He was the head coach. They just missed the playoffs in the wild card, which is progress for Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And he's a buddy of all of ours, so we love him to death. And he was an assistant when Wayne Gretzky was the head coach in Phoenix. And one of the great stories was that the team comes out. It's a pregame warm-up. They're skating around, and they're all lining up on the blue lines for the anthem.
Right.
Okay. And the chick who's singing the anthem is blazing hot. Okay.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And either Wayne or Tocchet says to the guy, I think it was Tocchet, says to one of their captains, you know, if you score us a goal tonight, I'll fix you up with the anthem singer. Right.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, the guy scores a goal.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. Scores a goal okay. that night. So yeah. apparently I don't know what happened with the anthem. So they do it again. They're on the road. They do it again. Tocchet says, I'll fix you up. You know, there's the anthem singer. If you get us a couple points tonight, happens again. Well, the third game back at home, they're all behind the bench. They line up in the blue line and Tocchet's laughing his head off. Okay. Oh. As he says to the guy, I'll tell you what, look out there. I'll fix you up with the anthem singer. And Gretz goes, knock it off. It was Paulina, his daughter. True story.
Oh, that's brutal. I thought you were going to say it was a guy.
No. It was Paulina. Yeah. Talk's going, okay, we got to do it three games in a row. Anyway, that superstition quickly ended. It quickly ended with Phoenix. So.
Yeah, Wayne traded the guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the guy said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go -7 on purpose. I can't do this. Yeah.
Wayne should have called him over and said, you're scratched. Get your gear off.
Yeah, don't even think about it. Anyway, so the question was, as we regroup again, about best athletes in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in that debate's been going on for years and years and years, but I mean, modern day. Okay. I don't know all the guys in base, like Babe Ruth and all those guys. I don't give a shit about them.
My pick is Gretz, hands down.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Go figure.
Sports Illustrated actually did a comparison of, I think, Babe Ruth, Jordan, Gretz, and somebody else. And they did all these, statistics.
Just stop and have a sip. You're looking at it right now. I can tell you're drying up. Just have a little sip of the wine.
I don't have anything open. Nope.
Okay.
Not yet, but if this cord's long enough, I might be able to good idea. Anyway, Sports Illustrated did something where they compared their stats, and Wayne was like hands down better than anybody else. So I go with Gretz. Going with Gretz, baby.
It reminds me of, I may have told this story. I'm trying to keep track of our topics.
Yeah, I know. Pete and Repeat. That might be the name of our new show.
where the guy at the end, he's in the locker room and they've won the Stanley Cup and everyone's going bananas and they're dumping beers in each other's face and champagne's everywhere. And the guy's got his family in there and they stuff the mic in his face and they go, can you explain this, you know? And he goes, like, the full F-bomb. He goes, this is absolutely the best fucking day of my life. And as he says it, he looks over and sees his wife, right? He goes, this is the second.
I wonder who that was.
Yeah, I forget who it was. And then his buddy said, this isn't the second greatest day. Your wedding wasn't the first day. I didn't see you holding her over your head, like a stand, passing her around.
Yeah.
Screaming.
Yeah. Take a drink. Take a drink.
Okay. So you'll give it to Gretz. Okay. anyway, give us a reason why. Okay, I love Wayne. I mean, I got no.
Wayne is not only a great. Oh, there goes the first dart of the show.
First jet.
Mm-hmm. But Gretz was not just a great hockey player. He was great track athlete, baseball player, basketball, tennis. So when I really truly think of a great all round athlete, you got to throw in some other sports. I don't know about the other guys, but Wayne could do it all, man. You've seen him. I mean, we played basketball. We were playing basketball when he lived in Beverly Hills and playing for the Kings. I don't know who I was playing for, probably Dallas or something.
Right.
We were up 9-0 and somebody chirped like, we're going to beat you. We're playing 3-on-3. He beat us 10-9.
Really?
10-9. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was just like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, as he always says, you got to earn your nickname.
Yeah.
You got to earn your nickname.
Or he always says, it's in the video.
You're gonna have to buy the book.
Yeah.
Tell us, playoffs are we're into the third round, except if you're Boston, who absolutely annihilated, which was the sentimental story going in, was Carolina.
Yeah.
Got through the first two rounds and then they got just fucking smoked.
Yeah.
Four straight. The closest game I think was 2-1.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, Russ, as they say in the biz.
Well, I'm really happy for Cam Neely. Cam and I are very close. He's the president of the Boston Bruins. And then, I like the way Boston's playing because they've got four really good lines. They've obviously got the big line they have there, and they just play so freaking hard, and they're fun to watch. And Tuukka Rask is standing on his head, and I love the Finns. I love the accents the Finnish guys have. He gets interviewed after and it's fun to watch. I'm happy. And now St. Louis is starting to drum the Sharks. And so that will be an interesting series. The old, we were talking about it. If it's Boston, St. Louis, wouldn't it be nice if they bring back Bobby Orr in the, you know, that famous picture where he scores the goal in overtime and the guy tripped him in the air?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Iconic photograph.
I don't know if that gentleman is alive still that tripped him, but it'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it? Bring those two guys back for the opening of the series if it is Boston and St. Louis.
Oh, absolutely. I'll give you something to think about the best plays you've ever seen in hockey now that you bring that up, because Bobby Orr, of course, that photograph is of him laid straight out in the air after he scored a goal. Someone else told me that he one time, Bobby Orr, of course, was the defenseman with Boston Bruins, but he scored 50 goals, didn't he? As a defenseman, 1 year? He's like way up there,
He scored, but
you're going to give me shit for dropping stats on you.
He led the league in scoring, though. Like, you know, he was phenomenal. He was like Gretzky.
Someone told me one of the best plays ever in hockey was Bobby Orr apparently was circling, had the puck in his own end, skated all the way down to the other blue line, might have even gone into the offensive zone, turned around because he dropped his glove behind the net when he took off.
Yep.
Okay, then he went down with only one glove, turned around, skated all the way back with the puck, picked up his fucking glove, and then whipped down there and scored.
But I don't know if he scored, but he was shorthanded, and that's why he was ragging the puck because he was killing the penalty.
Right.
I mean, it was phenomenal that he went back and actually got his glove. But the reason he was, you know, skating all over the ice because he was just killing the penalty.
Yeah, cool. I don't know if you can look it up on YouTube, but
he's another great man. I got to get to know Bobby in Boston. First met Bobby watching the Grey Cup Montreal when I was 18, playing for the Canadian Olympic team, and we watched the Grey Cup together in Montreal. And he was drinking then. He hasn't had a drink in probably 25 years, but. Not a lot, but just such a nice human being. I mean, if I know Wayne and they compare Wayne and Bobby and who's better and all this, but you know what? They're very, very similar in the way they treat people and how they interact with people. And Bobby's just a wonderful guy. And then I got to spend a lot more time with him in Boston because of Cam Neely. So
and he's gone on to be a great agent.
You
know, great play. Here's another one I know is in fact true. Speaking of great plays, they call it one of the best because it has to do with Gretz, of course, that he scored a goal. Here, it's like a little really good trivia question. He scored a goal and called a penalty at the same time. And what he did, excuse me, was broke out from his own end. And he always tells the story how he would count guys as he passed them, breaking down the ice. Okay. He would, right? That's what he'd do. He'd whip one, you know, two, three, four. And then he whips around the, he goes five, six, wham, and whips the puck in and says, too many men on the ice. You know?
That's hilarious.
One of the great plays. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. That's great. Chris Chelios, too, told me another one where he, Mario Lemieux, of course, was, you know, the other guy. Okay. Yeah. The other guy. And Chelios was telling a story. He goes, he always beat him, right? Lemieux always fucking beat him every time he came down. You know? He's like, Chelios is Ofer here trying to defend him.
Oh, here he comes again. Shit.
here he comes again. He says this. So he says, I finally got him. I'm a little off the boards. Okay. He's coming up the side of the board. I got him shut off.
Yeah.
Okay. He can't go wide. He can't go wide because I'm there.
You went
and
dead
he can't
again.
Go inside because I'll check him. And all he hears is Mario saying, look out, Chelly. Here I come. Here I come. And he goes left, but whips the puck up along the glass, like with his right hand. And zips it around Chelios, goes in behind him, and all Chelios can hear is he's going, wee!
Oh my.
As he went by him. So,
oh my God.
Anyway.
I lost you there for a couple minutes, so sorry, or a minute. So,
well, I was going to ask you what you think were one of the greatest plays when you played hockey. There's a couple there that we just talked about, but in your career, you don't know.
No, Denny Savard. Remember the Denny Savard spinorama?
The spinorama.
My God. And he was playing in Chicago and of playing us lowly Leafs in the 80s. And he spun around, I don't know if it was Al Ifrady or somebody like that. And Al reached out and hooked him as he caught him. And he had one hand on his stick and fired it in the net. Still scored. Yeah. Old Denny.
The slippery little Frenchman. Yeah. You brought up the Boston Bruins. You got some connections there. Hopefully it'll be St. Louis. They win today. St. Louis goes up 3-2 in a best of seven, of course.
Yeah.
So they're one game away on their way to the Stanley Cup. It'd be great for St. Louis. You know, Chaser and of course, Darren Pang's been around that team for a long time. Holly they showed him on TV the other day, cheering.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I like about Cam Neely. I interviewed him, several years ago when I was doing a radio show, and you might be able to speak to this, but he was, they were debating whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not. And I still he's not in the Hall of Fame, is he?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, he is now.
Yeah.
Okay. So that sort of screws up this story. But what he was the first guy when they were talking about should he be in the Hall of Fame. And when they asked him the question, everyone was expecting the pat answer of, well, that's not up to me. You know, I'm proud of what I did, but blah, blah, blah. And he says, absolutely, I should be in the Hall of Fame.
No way. You know,
absolutely, he did. You know, he said, really? Yes, I should. I think I've done as much as any of the guys who are in there. So I always love that about the guy. Never expected that answer.
No, oh, yeah. I wouldn't have. And Cam's one of my closest friends from hockey. And that kind of surprises me that he said that. But he has a record that isn't a recorded record. He scored the fastest 50 goals ever. If you count the last part of one season and the first part of the next season, consecutive games, something. Right. So anyways, he got injured or something, so he didn't finish. And then when he started it up, he was telling me about it. Well, we might have to get him on one day so he can tell us the story.
Well, I love your line because they're talking about when Wayne retired. And they're talking about all his records. And Wayne got a little busy, okay, with the endorsements after he retired.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone says, do you remember this?
Oh, I told you. I was the one who told you.
And I know, I'm laughing my head off because I'm going, no one will ever break the record of 50 goals in 39 games. And there's a big roar from the crowd. And you're by the microphone and you go, or 50 commercials in 39 weeks. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Because we had this conversation, Wayne and I, and we're sitting around. We both retired. and we played golf. And I said, so Gretz, do you think your endorsements are going to go up, down, stay the same? And he goes, nah, they're going to drop by, I'm guessing 40%. Well, my friends in Canada said, I mean, every time you turn the station, it's Wayne Gretzky endorsing them. I see him about 6 months later and I go, I don't think that's happening. He goes, Russ, I'm not down 40%. I'm up 40% or something.
I know. It was weird, especially for a guy who retires, right?
Yeah.
Active athletes make a lot more money. You know, Phil Mickelson is making money at will, right? He's been playing a long time.
Yeah.
I know he, I know his deal. You know, Wayne was with Ford at one time when Phil Mickelson was at Ford. And he said, the difference is Phil makes 90% more money than I do sponsoring Ford because he's active. You know,
I got it.
Anyway, so Gretz is doing okay.
Yeah,
Gretz is doing okay. So listen, a couple other stories we're working on. You know him and I know him. Craig McTavish, who's with one of the old boys club, as they say, I hate using that term because they've been killing the Oilers on keeping all those guys who coached or played with them at one time. Craig McTavish decides to leave the team, and I always thought he had a lifetime deal with the owner. This week, he's up and leaving Edmonton and going to Russia to coach for Lokomotiv or Lokomotive, which, before we talk about that, Lokomotiv, of course, in 2011 was the hockey team in the KHL that the team plane went down.
No,
and
terrible.
It was awful, and it went down and killed everybody but one guy. There was a couple guys there you might have known on that. Pavel Dimitra was on that team and Brad McCrimmon.
Brad McCrimmon, yeah. Yeah, it was just horrible for horrible everybody, scene.
As my dad used to say, that's the old problem minimizer there, not to make light of it, but it sure is. I've never been wired to figure that stuff out, why it happens. But Wayne Gretzky, speaking of Wayne, we often refer to him. You know, that guy's defected the other way from Canada to Russia. When there's lockouts, there's guys who go over and play there. There's fellas who are winding their career down and go over or decide to, you know, they get pissy. They get a little pissed off and they go over and play in the KHL. And Wayne always said, have at her. At her, man.
Yeah.
No matter what the dough is, because I'm telling you, when you get there and the weather and the culture and the food is so much different, it'll make you appreciate what it's like to be in North America, you know, particularly playing hockey in the NHL. It's the greatest game ever. But he goes there to coach for 2 years for this team, and I want to know why.
I would say it's financial, that he's probably getting paid, a lot of money.
Yep.
Because he could coach anywhere, maybe not in the NHL, but if he really wanted to coach, And he just, some guys just love coaching, right? Andy Murray's coaching college hockey, and he's had a really successful career in college because he knows he's probably too old to go back to the NHL. He was 20 years in the National Hockey League. So why would a guy like Mac T go to Europe or over to Russia? It's got to be they offered him too much money.
Yeah, I agree. That was my take. For all the other reasons I just spoke about, you're not going there for that. So it's got to be cash. What sort of dough are coach? What sort of money can a coach make over there?
You're asking the wrong guy.
What about players then?
But some of the players they say the players I've talked to that the guys get paid NHL money over there. I don't know if it's as much, but they said the stars definitely do get as much. And I think that's why we lost a few of the great Russian players to go. They just want to go home and play, and they're making great money. So,
is it a good league, Russ? I heard it's a little underhanded. That maybe some of the teams are run by the mob, Russian mob.
Hey, don't laugh at the mob.
Okay.
You get a knock on your door. Anyways, I don't know, because I don't watch those games. I mean, I see highlights here and there, and it looks a little commercial, maybe not as good as the NHL, but they're producing great players, you know. So I don't know. I don't get that. Why Mac T? What is Mac T? 60 now?
He's 60 years old.
Yeah.
Especially Russ, it must be a lot of money, because Mac T could probably land a job somewhere.
Exactly.
Maybe not assistant GM, but sort of, if he wanted to, head of scouting, or I think he was their player personnel guy.
Hold it. You know what? Hey, he just, Mac T just texted me.
Oh,
and, yeah. And he said, living in Edmonton prepared him for the winters in Russia.
Exactly. You know what? We may answer the question ourselves. It's not like he's leaving Palm Springs, man. It's like, fuck, give your head a shake. Of course I'll leave Edmonton. You don't move here. You don't move here for the weather or the architecture. Believe me, it's not a great place to live. Anyway, I'm sure it must be for the, it must be a ton of money because he should easily be able to make $400,000 or $500,000 somewhere doing something, wouldn't he?
I would guess yes. So he must be.
What are assistant coaches making, Russ, in the NHL or for, say the head of scouting or assistant GMs?
Assistant GMs are making between $400,000 and $500,000.
Right.
There's probably a couple under that. GMs, your guess is good, mine, but probably, you know, million bucks. Million to 3 million probably. And coach, right. Look at the coaches. I mean, now we've got, you know, Trotz is making 4.8. Babcock's making what? 6, 7, 8 million.
He's big. He's big.
John Cooper's probably making in the fours now. He should be. He's worth it.
Todd McClellan just signed for 5 million a year in Anaheim.
No, not in Anaheim, in LA with the Kings.
Or in LA, sorry. Yeah.
Wow, he got 5. He was making 3 in Edmonton.
Yeah, he had a good deal. Yeah, he had a good deal. What's the before we leave this topic? What's a scout making? Like when these teams sort of look after guys, it's usually they make them a scout, don't they? Guys who played a long time with the team.
I don't know what scouts make. I have no idea. Because
take a shot.
I'd say $75,000.
Oh, that's it? Huh? Yeah.
Well, the ones that are not like the head scout, but the
right.
I would say they're $75,000 to $100,000, and a lot of them are. It's a part time. They have a full time job, and then they're part time scouts.
Right.
So
we talked about the Boston sweeps. You got your best athlete here. I'm just ticking off my topics, Russ. Rush.
Oh my God.
Sure. You're having difficulty because I'm trying not to swear.
Did you come out of retirement? Take a little sip of something?
No, Russ, that's a sensitive issue.
Yeah, I know. You'll be going to therapy.
Although if I do this long enough with you, I may break many years of not drinking.
What caused you to start drinking again? Oh, fuck, I did a show with Russ.
Yeah. I'll tell you who one of my friends is. Oh, I understand. Oh, Russ Gordon.
Okay. How about the name of our show? Didn't take us very long.
We were talking about the last show. It was called He Said. We figured out it's the same name as two overtly gay guys who have a show. So it's now called The Suspendables is the name. It didn't tie in with anybody else. Jerome and Courtney unlocked or unleashed. I better get it right.
Oh, my God.
We have an email, too, Russ. The Suspendables. At globalstorynetwork.com.
Beautiful.
Okay, we've partnered up with them to do this. It was several months in the making, but here we are doing that. So God bless them for taking us on.
Yeah, no kidding.
Before we go, Russ.
Yes.
I got to admit, I'm a little tired of the hockey.
Yeah.
Okay. It's getting too long. You know, the 7-game series. This thing's going to go into freaking June. And starts in late September.
Yeah.
You know, with exhibition games. It's like, can we go back to 5-game series, Russ?
Well, okay, when I first started playing, the first round of the playoffs was best of 5.
Right.
And I remember I don't know who it was. We had a lockout, we had a labor dispute, and maybe been the late Pat Quinn said, you guys are crazy. The season's way too long. But you guys want to get paid the money you want to get paid. It's going to get longer.
Right. Which is usually the answer, right? The league makes so much money, right?
Yeah.
They got to keep playing it. But I think it's too long.
You think it's too long because you're an Edmonton fan.
Yeah, that's right. Because I got to wait from April till October every freaking year.
If McDavid was out there in the third round right now, you'd be talking about how great the Oilers are and all that bullshit. So don't.
I would be. Absolutely, I would be.
Don't lie to the rest of us who are enjoying the playoffs.
You know, you're talking about how long the season is. There's a book called Ball Four that was written that has become a very quotable book, and they were interviewing one of the baseball players. You talk about long seasons. Of course, baseball is 164 games, okay?
Yeah.
And they're interviewing a guy, and the guy says, what's the toughest part? These road trips. Like, some of these road trips are 2.5 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
He said, the toughest part is coming home and pretending you're horny.
Oh, oh, Jesus. I can't understand why you're living alone, divorced, and single. I can't. It just goes unbelievable.
I love telling that story, stories like that with you, and you're going, idiot, I'm fucking married.
Yeah.
Okay, shut up with that shit. I always like that.
Fucking idiot. Jesus
Christ. Take a sip of wine. You're going to be okay.
No, no, I'm not. I'm waiting. I'm waiting until the show's over.
Here's the other deal, Russ. You know, Mark Messier said years ago about just after he retired, maybe right around the time he retired, that he said the cost of hockey to put your kid in hockey.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Is unreachable now, and he thinks it's a massive problem with what he called as a grassroots game. It should be affordable to everyone to play at any level. I talked to a parent the other day, a buddy of mine. And I think he said it was, now his kid is midget, okay, you know, yeah. Like he's, yeah. I don't know how competitive he is, but he's in a very normal league, okay?
Okay.
He's not a prospect here yet.
Right.
I think he said it was 12 grand.
Yeah.
For the year, for tournaments and hotels and all that shit.
Yeah.
And you know, to ice time, all that comes with it. I don't think that includes equipment, which... No. Some of these kids are getting, are these twigs? Do they cost $200 a stick?
Oh, they're some more than that. I think they're $350 or something, $300, aren't they?
Anyway, this game of hockey at the amateur level or kid level has become a sport for the rich.
That's somewhat true, but a lot of families who put their kids through hockey just sacrifice their own lives. And when I was coaching my son about 8 years ago in Bantam, in LA,
right,
the parents had to write a check for $13,400 for the entire year, or the kid wasn't allowed on the ice because they were worried if you gave them a monthly pay program that they might quit, and then that would screw up the team budget, and that included ice time, jerseys, big deal, jerseys,
right,
and travel, hotel, and we had a manager, and I think our budget for just a Bantam team was like $250,000 or something for the year. I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
But, I don't know what the answer is unless the NHL or somebody starts sponsoring where maybe the kids' equipment, you know, because equipment's, we're not even talking about buying equipment. But if maybe there was something where the equipment was part of the program, but parents, it's not just rich people putting their kids in hockey, and their parents who can't afford it that are putting it on their credit card and just worrying about it later. Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's sucking the life out of some of these parents, right?
Yeah, and you know what? When the kids are really young, the parents think their kids have a chance at making it to the NHL or getting a scholarship.
Right.
And as they get older, they start figuring it out. You know, when they're 15, 16, and like you said, your friend, he might not be a prospect. That parent's probably not going nuts on stuff because he's like, okay, my kid's just playing for fun. He's not going to ever go anywhere.
Right. Where do you draw the line, Russ? So, you know, if you have the resources, that's fine. One of the suggestions I heard as a small start to take this thing, you know, into a more manageable level is that they should put a limit on hockey sticks, for example, that maybe you're only allowed to have a certain brand of stick to play in that league, or that it's only $50 or $100 or something like that. I thought, meh.
No, that's dumb.
Where do you draw the line, Russ, when you bring this up? Where do you draw the line with your kid? And you've been a parent. Mm-hmm. You've lived it.
Yeah.
At what point does a parent cross that line to say, okay, we're all in, this kid's going to make the NHL?
There is no line. I mean, if the parent's buying the kid six sticks and he needs two, I mean, that's I never saw a kid with too many hockey sticks because the equipment today is so flipping good that they don't need a ton of things. I grew up with hand-me-down skates, so
right.
I don't know. I just feel bad for the parents that are putting it on their credit card and worrying about paying it later.
Yeah, or this thing, Russ, where they think their kid is going to make it.
Yeah,
you know, and I mean, there's a group of kids that will for sure, right? There's the phenoms and there's all that stuff that they will. So sink it all in there. You're gonna make dividends here off your kid. But so many parents who go into this thing with the dream.
Yeah.
By the way, not your kid's dream.
No.
By the way,
yeah.
The parent's dream.
Yeah.
And you hear it all the time, right?
Yeah.
And the chance of a kid making the NHL is very limited.
Yeah.
Very limited.
It's getting smaller every year.
Tougher, well, the tougher. same issue, Russ, by the way, is I could not afford to take my two sons to go sit in good seats at a hockey game.
Oh my God.
Fuck, it's $750.
So
if I had, I'm
fortunate enough to get free tickets. And
yeah.
When my kids were really little, I said, these fucking hockey tickets are the most expensive free tickets I've ever got. I mean, you drive in, parking's whatever, $20-$30. And then right. you go by the concession stand, the hot dogs or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the kids looking at the jerseys and and all that stuff. Yeah, well, the tickets were free. I'll buy them this, that. I'm walking out of there. I dropped $500.
I know. I'll leave us with a great story. Okay. One of my favorites.
This better be great. You're telling us.
So dude is at the game. Okay. So it's $1 million to go to the game. It's game seven. It's the playoffs, the final round, game seven decider here to see who gets the Stanley Cup. And dude sits down with his buddy and there's a guy beside him, but he's two seats over.
Yeah.
And the seat is empty in between the two of them, you know?
Yeah.
And he's sort of waiting for someone to sit down there. Of course, this ticket is, you know, it's thousands of dollars to buy a ticket to get to this game.
Yeah.
And no one sort of shows up, you know, and he's looking over at the guy and he sort of nods at him. The guy goes, yeah, hey, how are you? And, he says, is this your seat here, the one that's empty? He goes, yes, it is. Yeah. And he goes, are they showing up? And he goes, no, they're not. And the guy says, what's up? You know, they're about to drop the puck. The guy says, well, it was going to be my wife who was going to be with me tonight. But, you know, she couldn't be here because she died. Right. And the guy goes, oh, my God, man, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's terrible. And then he pauses for a minute and says, hey, listen, I got to ask you something. Couldn't you have given it to like a nephew or a cousin or a best friend or something or one of your children? And he goes, I could have, but they're all at her funeral.
That's brutal.
That was a good joke. Oh, that's good. God. I think I made it the whole show with only a couple of F-bombs.
Yeah.
Great show again, Rusty. We got another one in the books.
We'll see you next week.
You're going to see us next week. You're down in Gozer.
Yeah.
The richest, most expensive place to own a cottage in the world. And you can go back to your wine now with all your buddies. You're playing a bunch of golf.
Oh, yeah.
You know what, Russ? Forget it. Go fuck yourself. Okay, there's my F-bomb. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and, of course, him, Rusty Courtnell. We're back each and every week to bring you more stuff. Take it easy, everybody. We'll see you, Russ. Talk to you later.